Joe Buck has joined us on Sports Byline. Joe, I referred to the tribute that you pay to your father from time to time with the phrase, "We'll see you tomorrow night." Tell me a little bit about how that developed and what the story is behind it.
Yeah, it's a reference to a call that he made back in 1991. And, you know, it was something that he said in Game 6 when Kirby Puckett hit a home run to force a Game 7 in that World Series between the Braves and the Twins. And that was a really weird time. I mean, I could talk to you for 2 hours about that topic alone, about my dad going through that CBS time and what that whole experience was like for him and what it was like for us as a family and the scrutiny and the, you know, he just kind of did those games, it felt like for us, with his hands cuffed and really wasn't himself. And so he went through a lot of flack. But when he made that call, I still have people in Minnesota that remember that and remind me of it. And so the year he died, 2002, that World Series went to 7 games. And I used it at the end of Game 6, referencing Game 7 tomorrow night. I said, "We'll see you tomorrow night." And I said it because it wasn't that long ago at the time that my dad had passed away. And then I used it again, and that's when it really got the attention, which was last season, 2011, when I used it in Game 6 when David Freese hit the game-winning home run in the, I guess, the 11th inning to force a Game 7. And I did it because it was in St. Louis. It was a booth away from where he would have been if he were alive. It was a St. Louis kid who hit it. It was right there. And I did it because it had been about 20 years to the day that he said it. And I did it for my mom, who was at home watching and listening. And it was kind of a tip of the cap to him and to her. And it's retired, not going to do it again, not going to be a Jack Buck cover band. I'm just going to leave those quotes to him, and I'll try and dream up my own.
You know, you mentioned about your dad being with CBS and what he went through and what your family went through and everything. Did you have any trepidation about being with the network? Because it's obviously a lot different. When you do a ball game, and you've been criticized for this, and I thought unfairly, where, oh, you're favoring one team or another. They want you to go right down the middle and everything. But did you have any trepidation about being with the network because of the fact that everybody wants it to be vanilla?
Yes and no. I lived that with my dad, and he and I were so close. I knew the toll it took on him. But for me to advance, that was the next step, and it came early. That stuff about, oh, you're rooting for the other team, they really don't want you to call it down the middle. The network does, and I feel like I do. But fans of either side really prefer you and want you to call it their way. And they want you to call it through their eyes. And when you don't, then they think, oh, well, naturally he doesn't like my team. I mean, I would be an idiot if I didn't enjoy doing games in New York with the Yankees or Boston with the Red Sox or Philadelphia with the Phillies or these big markets where, you know, all the network executives are happy and they're skipping to the truck in the morning, and they're, as opposed to the smaller market teams, which are just as fun for me as well. I mean, that's kind of the irony of it. I like the variation. I like doing big market teams, small market teams, but I don't care who wins. The people watching do, but that's how they listen to it. So I get it, and especially now with as much social media is out there, you're going to hear more of it, but you just can't let it seep in. I mean, if I'm doing a Yankees-Angels ALCS, I mean, I don't have any rooting interest in that. But I do root for Fox, and I root for Tim, and I root for long series. Beyond that, it doesn't change my life one way or another who wins. I just like to see good baseball.
You know as well as I do, when Rudy Martsky was the sports media writer at the USA Today, I had one executive at CBS tell me that when Rudy sneezes, they want to know how bad the cold is. Are people in the media concerned about what they read in the media about themselves from others, particularly on a national basis?
I really think that's changed. We were talking about that the other day. I mean, Rudy Martsky was one of the most powerful guys in this business in his time, you know, in, I would say, the mid to late 80s and really through most of the 90s, as far as I can remember, maybe into the early 2000s. And then the business really changed. And I think it changed You know, every newspaper has a guy. I mean, there's Richard Sandomir in New York with the New York Times, and you know, he's there with Phil Mushnick, and he's there with Bob Raceman and Neil Best and all those guys. And you know, you get to know them all over the years, and they've all, you know, taken their shots and given you a pat on the back every once in a while. But I don't know that anybody has the national voice and the ear of the network executives like Rudy did back then. Rudy was rough on my dad and really good to me. And it made a difference for my father, there's no doubt. And I'm sure it made a difference for me in the positive sense with Fox early on, because, as I said, I was just a kid doing these games. But he was very complimentary. But I think with blogs and, you know, these different websites, and whether it's Deadspin or it's Awful Announcing, all that stuff, you know, there's so much of it that there's no real one big voice. And he was that, and I don't think anybody's replaced him.
As a prelude to my next question, I did a Stanford game on television one afternoon down on the farm, and then as soon as I finished, I had to drive up to San Francisco and do a radio broadcast of the University of San Francisco basketball that night. Now, I think you know as well as I do, Joe, that when you come out of the booth, you're high, and then after about 45 minutes, you probably can't remember your own name. So in that 1 hour time period that I had to drive from Stanford up to the University of San Francisco to do that game, when they put the ball in the air for the tip, not a name came to my mind. And all I said was, "They're off."
Well, and I would bet that if you listen back to the broadcast, you'd think it was good. And you say that because I did an NFL game, the Giants, New York Giants, and this was the tricky part, at the San Francisco 49ers, and then took a trolley, which was ridiculous, from Candlestick to AT&T Park and did game one of the NLCS with the Cardinals and the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, it just kind of fell that way. And Fox asked me if I would do it or wanted to do it, and I'm all for challenges. And I'm glad I did it. I don't know that I would do it again, only because I didn't like the fact that it, you know, and I talked to the guys that I work for, and I said, listen, nobody cares that I'm really doing that. Maybe my family does, and my agent. But other than that, nobody cares. And so let's just do the games. And if somebody wants to say something, great. Somebody wants to rip it, great. They can have at it. But, you know, that's not the focus of this thing. And the focus was to do a good job on both games. And I'm glad I got through pretty clean, and I was glad they went as well as it did. And it was frustrating being on that trolley, wondering if I was going to make first pitch. And I got in there about 6 minutes before the first pitch, and the blood returned to the face of Tim McCarver, and off we went. And, you know, off they go. First pitch, and then you're doing baseball, and you just kind of settle in.
Yeah, I saw him when they opened up the telecast of the game one in the NLCS, and I thought he looked scared to death that he was going to have to be calling the play-by-play.
Well, the thing I didn't know, Ron, was, and I just assumed, you know, if I don't get there for the first pitch, I'm going to be there at the latest, unless there was overtime. But at the latest, I would be there in the middle of the first inning. And so Tim's done play-by-play for forever. I mean, he did 20 plus years of it for the Mets, and did some for the Phillies and the Yankees. So, I mean, it's not like he can't do it. It's not that difficult a thing to do. So I thought, well, he'll just cover it for a half inning, and then I'll pop in for the bottom half of the inning. I walked into the booth, and Darren Sutton was sitting there in a suit. And he goes, "Hey, Joe." And I went, "Oh, hey, Darren, how you doing?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm glad you made it. Otherwise, they were going to put me on." And I didn't even know I had a stand-in. So they were ready to just dump me, and it was going to be Darren's deal. So it was funny to go in there, and I wasn't even aware that I had somebody that was an understudy. But I'm glad I didn't get Wally pipped out of that thing, or Darren might still be doing it through the next 10 years.
One of the things that was scary for you was 2011, and after broadcasting for Fox, you developed a virus on the nerves of your vocal cords. And tell me a little bit about how that happened, and how scary was it for you?
Well, it was terrifying, and not just because of my career. And that's kind of maybe the interesting part. Maybe none of this is interesting, but I. When I got that, it was right after the Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl I did, so two Februaries ago. And about a week later, and I don't know if it was fatigue or if it was stress or what it was, but I had a virus that attacked the nerve to my left vocal cord. And I didn't know that at the time. I just woke up hoarse. I wasn't sick. And I just, my vocal cords weren't closing and making a normal sound. I didn't know that. I had to go to the doctor and I was like, why can't I talk? And the doctor said, oh, I know what it is just by hearing the tone of your voice, but I'll look anyway. And so he looked down there and he said, yep, it's what I thought. You have a paralyzed vocal cord. And my next thought was, okay, well, what's that? Like a cold? Is this like, I said to him, is this like a 2-week thing, a 3-week thing, a 2-day thing? He's like, no, it could be 3 months or it could be 6 months or it could be 12 months or it could never function again. And that was a tough sentence to hear, but everybody's been through stuff. And that was a trial that I had to go through. And I learned a lot. I mean, I learned that I can, you know, plow ahead even when things aren't perfect. And I had to go from worrying about what I was going to say to worrying about how I was going to say it and what noise was going to come out and how I could keep my breath throughout the entire sentence. And it was made my job about 10 times harder, but it was good to go through. And it reminded me how much I take for granted, how much I love what I do. And I've enjoyed my work so much more since coming back to normal. So it was a rough year, but everybody goes through stuff. And I'm glad I went through. I'm so glad it happened. And I never thought I'd say that when I was going through it, but it was a good thing in my life.
We only have a couple minutes left, Joe, but when you think about how long you've been doing it and how long you'll continue to do it, I'm just wondering, what is it that you do in order to keep it interesting to you? Because I know you've tried other aspects, like you tried the Joe Buck Live Show with HBO, and everybody likes to expand their talents to some degree. I think always likes to be challenged is the word I'm looking for. So what is it that you do? How do you approach that?
Well, I'm challenged every game. I mean, I'm sitting at my desk right now, and I've got a game this weekend, and I'm preparing for it. And I know that when I start talking, Jim Nance has just stopped talking. And I know that later that night, Al Michaels will start talking. And that's just the NFL side. Later Mike Tirico will start talking the next night. And I have to try and challenge myself to be in the same category as them. And I listen and steal stuff from them all the time, but that's my motivation. I want to try and prove that I belong in that group. And so I work hard at what I do, and I do a lot of research and reading and preparation and give myself the best chance to compete in that arena. As far as keeping it fresh, I mean, every game's fresh. You don't know what you're going to get. That's the beauty of this job. The HBO thing, I would do it again. My frustration with that is it was only 3 times, and I thought every show was getting better. Obviously, the Artie Lang thing didn't help, and we can do 5 shows on that if you want. But, you know, someday I'll try my hand at that again, and I'm excited to do it. And I'm really proud of the show that was on HBO. So, you know, whatever comes my way or nothing, I'll just sit and try to be the best dad I can be to my 2 daughters, and that's what brings me the most happiness. And that's really the most important thing, not calling the Giants and the Saints. It's, you know, what kind of impact am I having on my girls?
In 45 seconds, when you take a look at sports and just as an observer of it from a human standpoint, the athletes, the competition, the coaches and everything, what do you come away with since you've been involved with it for a long time?
It's beautiful, and it there's so many great stories. And, you know, I'm probably a part of the problem, but you tend to steer toward the negative. And yet every game with these athletic feats and guys that are stepping up and having these moments that they'll never forget and fans will never forget. And I think passion for these sports is at an all-time high. And that makes my job all the more fun. People care, and that's good. And I like it that way.
Joe, I want to thank you very much for your kindness, your friendship over the years, and also your dad, who was very inspirational and always available to me when I was a young sportscaster, giving me advice and giving me input. And the two of you together, I would have loved to have heard more of those broadcasts together, but you followed in his footsteps. You've led a life in broadcasting that has established its own footsteps. Thank you very much for joining us on Sports Byline.
Anytime for you, Ron. Thank you.
Joe Buck with us, again, broadcaster for the Fox Sports Network, doing the key game in the NFL and also the Major League Baseball game as well. We continue on Sports Byline.